Hello and welcome to a special podcast on the Holy Land. Now I'm joined by Dr. Harry Hagopian, who is an international lawyer. He's the consultant to the Bishops' Conference on the region. Harry is also a former Assistant General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches and a former Executive Secretary of the Jerusalem Interchurch Committee. Now that's important because it's a body representing all 13 traditional churches of the Holy Land. Now we're speaking ahead of a two-day conference, Monday and Tuesday, 18th and 19th of July, Harry, and I wanted first of all for you to frame for us the Christian reality of the Holy Land. So why exactly should we be helping our Christian brothers and sisters in the Holy Land?
Well, I think, first of all, greetings to you and to all the listeners, James. And it's nice to be here. It's been a long while again that I've been traveling and away from your studio. This conference is important, and it is important in the sense that it will try to highlight the Christian presence and the Christian witness in the Holy Land. It is important because that is where the biblical story started. That is where the whole Christian faith came together in its early stages, and therefore there is almost a sense of responsibility worldwide within the Christian fellowship as to what happens to the living stones, and Saint Peter calls them, in that part of the world. So in that sense it's important, but it becomes even more important when we realize that those communities, like the early church, are very small communities in number. They are Orthodox, they're Catholic, they're Anglican and Reform, spread across the whole Holy Land, and depends on how you define the Holy Land, but for the purposes of this conference, let's say that the Holy Land is basically Israel and Palestine. And in that sense, what the conference will be doing is to look at the realities of those Christians in the Holy Land, invite some of their church leaders, certainly the Latin Rite Catholic Patriarch, His Beatitude Fuad Twal, and the Anglican Bishop Suhail Dawani, to come to London alongside with representatives from different organizations, churches, NGOs, to try and paint for us here in London, and the conference would be at Lambeth Palace, paint for us a picture of what are those realities facing our sisters and brothers in that part of the world that saw the genesis of our faith.
Now, realities, it's an interesting word, but it's a difficult one to get to the bottom of, isn't it? I'm going to throw a few things at you here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've got the Archbishop of Westminster, the Most Reverend Vincent Nichols, and the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, talking about the 200,000 or so Christians and their fears that that number is dwindling and dwindling. But then we hear that that might not be the case from other sources. So we have this mixture of stats. We can always get caught up in stats. We then have all kinds of difficulties with, you know, the realities, political and interreligious, of the region. What is the truth here, Harry? What is the bottom line position?
To be honest with you, James, it's very difficult to say what the truth is, because the truth differs from person to person, and it's very difficult to be objective enough to say this is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Forgive me, I'm speaking like a lawyer here. But in a sense, it is a small community, I agree. There might be differences in the numbers. The numbers, the statistics given go up and come down depending on how you look at it. It is a fact that the local indigenous Christians of the Holy Land, who are by and large in their majority Arab Palestinian Christians, their numbers have dwindled quite dramatically over the last few decades. However, there has also been an impressive number of Christians coming from Russia and Eastern Europe into the Holy Land. And therefore, if you factor those into those statistics, then of course the numbers and the results you get are different from the ones that somebody else might talk to you about. This is why I don't particularly get bogged down in numbers. The reason I don't get bogged down in numbers is not only because statistics is an inexact science, it is more because I do not believe that the whole ethos of our faith depends on how many Christians are there or are not there. The ethos of the faith, when it started, it was a cluster of small unpolished Christians going all over the land, trying to evangelize, trying to proclaim the gospel, trying to talk about this wonderful example that Jesus set for us and the things he told us in his Sermon on the Mount. Therefore, the question is not one of numbers. The question is one of the quality of the witness as much as the quantity. But unfortunately, of course, the quality and the quantity get mixed up together in our globalized 24/7 information world.
Now, obviously, there's a desire to get to the nub of the true experiences of the Christians of the Holy Land. But Harry, how easy is that, though, really? Because, you know, you have people that are perhaps worried about the regimes that surround them, the realities of the difficulties in being able to speak out freely. I mean, what sort of picture will be painted during these 2 days, and how close to fact will that be?
Well, that's interesting again, James, because there will be a whole variety of people. I mean, this whole conference, as you kindly said, is co-sponsored and co-chaired by the two Archbishops of Westminster and Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams and Archbishop Vincent Nichols. They will have their counterparts, as I said, the Latin Rite Catholic Patriarch and the Anglican Bishop, but you will also have many other voices, a lot of those voices being lay voices. You will have organizations such as Bethlehem University, who will be sending young students from the university to come and talk about their experience living in the West Bank, which is a different experience from those, say, living in Jerusalem, which is different from those living in the northern West Bank, such as Nablus, or for that matter, let's not forget, the few hundred remaining Christians in Gaza. So in that sense, they will be talking about that. You will have people from an organization called One Voice, which is where Palestinians and Israeli Jews come together to try and speak out a message of reconciliation across the two peoples. You will have other NGOs, you will have church representatives, basically civil society also would be represented. And the idea is, what exactly is happening there? And let me try and, if I may, summarize that to you in four highlights. And I hope those four highlights would be undergirded during the conference. Now, they might not be, but we're talking pre-conference. We might talk differently post-conference. The first one is, I think that the churches themselves, the 13 traditional churches of the Holy Land that I had the privilege of representing during the Oslo period of negotiations, and which represent the Orthodox churches as well as the Catholic and Anglican Reformed churches, they have learned, perhaps by circumstance more than anything else, to work much more ecumenically together. I have witnessed this actually. The working, the coming together of those churches is being increasingly more impressive in terms of having a common Christian agenda that comes out of the Holy Land. The second thing is that whether we like it or not, and no matter how much politically correct we need to be or not, we have to realize that the vagaries and the ravages of an occupation that has lasted for well over 40 years has indelibly impressed those people and affected those people in their daily lives, in their existence, in their socioeconomic realities, in the fact that they have difficulties, because at the end of the day, what your listeners and everybody else should realize is that most of those Christians, sisters and brothers of ours, who profess the same Savior, Jesus Christ, are actually indigenous Arabs who live in an Arab society, largely in a Muslim culture. And therefore, we cannot take them out, put them in a bubble, and pretend that they are different from the rest of the society within which they work. And in that sense, the sense of immigration, the sense of the difficulties, the sense of the checkpoints and political pressures that they're under are pretty much the same, with some differences, of course, that are experienced by the Muslim Palestinians, which are the overwhelming majority of the Palestinians in the Holy Land. This, however, has also come up with another interesting phenomenon, which I also observed myself, which is the increasing radicalization of society, of Palestinian society. Palestinians have always been extremely proud to present their cause as being a secular one. And yet, gradually, there has been the impact of an Islamic radicalism creeping into some parts of society within the Palestinian circle, within the West Bank, certainly within Gaza now, and within Gaza, not only necessarily with Hamas. Interestingly enough, your listeners would think that when I speak about Muslim radicalism, I'm talking about Hamas in Gaza. Actually, Hamas is trying to combat a more vehement type of radical Salafism that is beginning to take root in Gaza as well. But the reason this is happening, all of it comes back, I think, to some extent, to the socioeconomic realities, to the lack of opportunities, to the difficulties that a lot of those people are facing, some of whom, incidentally, are friends of mine, whom I know very well, whether they're Greek Orthodox, whether they're Greek Catholic, whether they're Anglican. And they are facing difficulties, and they find themselves sometimes completely cut off from the rest of this Christian fellowship. So the question is, as they learn to work more cohesively together as institutions, because they have pretty much worked quite well together as individuals, and as they face the vagaries of a rather relentless occupation and the creeping in of a certain kind of religious radicalism and discrimination, the question then is, what can we do? And this is why, James, I think that the focus should not necessarily be on them coming to tell us of their realities. We've been hearing this for 30 years. The question we should ask is, what can we in Europe and the West do to help them there?
I think you know what the next question is going to be then, don't you? And my point would be, Harry, there's a lot of talk by both archbishops about awareness, mm-hmm. solidarity and awareness. Important mm-hmm. that we understand what's going on mm-hmm. out there for the Christians. Now, for me personally, it's not so much awareness. It is exactly that. Well, what on earth do I do about it? I might be thinking, obviously, I can pray. That's mm-hmm. right and just. I could go on a pilgrimage. That, again, is a very good way of supporting the Living Stones. But will I just go to the biblical sites? Will I just see that, you know, what I am allowed to see, mm-hmm. or will I get a true notion of what's going on? I mean, what really can we do to help?
You're absolutely right, James. This is a question I always dread when I'm being asked, because despite all the experience I have with the Holy Land, it is very difficult for me to present you with a solution paper. If I were able to do that, or if anybody else were able to do that, we wouldn't be having this conference, nor would we be having this interview in the way we're doing it in this podcast. It's very difficult, but you're absolutely right. Of course, as Christians, we should pray for our Christians there, as I hope they do for us. Prayer is not one-way street. We all need to pray for each other. We all need to stand in prayer for solidarity together. Yeah. But what does that solidarity mean? What does that awareness mean? It means that you have to go there not only, as you said, in order to see the stones, to be happy that you went and saw the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Church of the Nativity, the Church of the Annunciation. In other words, to run where Jesus once walked 2 millennia ago, but rather to take time to speak with the local people there, to listen to them. This exercise in this conference is not so much many people who are garrulous enough to come and speak, but rather for more people to just sit back, listen. Deep listening would be a process in order to suss out, to understand what is being said to them, and then to think, okay, would it be by special pilgrimages that we could acquaint the West better with what is happening there? Would it be by standing in solidarity with them through prayer, but also practically? For instance, one of the highlights of this conference is the ecumenization and the launching of the Friends of the Holy Land, which is basically, in a nutshell, a way of encouraging parishes in this country as well as across the Western world to try and contribute to the projects, either ongoing projects or new projects in the Holy Land, in order to try and help those Christians, whether it is in their hospitals and hospices, whether it's in their schools, whether it is in their churches, whether it is in their old people's homes. The interesting thing about it is that you said the number 200,000. Now, without without going into statistics, what interests me is that there is such a small Christian presence there, all clumped together would be roughly less than 2% of the overall population, and yet they provide so many social services to such a wide strata of society, be they Christian or Muslim, that it is, I think, our responsibility to try and help them as they try to live their daily lives with dignity, which is the message coming out, incidentally, of the whole Arab Spring. Dignity, a sense of citizenship, and a sense of relevance to the wider church. This, I think, is what we should do. So whether we can mobilize that ecumenical witness practically through funds, whether we can do it through prayer, whether we can do it politically by showing solidarity with those Christians, a lot of whom, for instance, cannot travel from one part of the West Bank to the other or from Bethlehem to Jerusalem. Imagine the birthplace and the resurrection site of our Lord Jesus Christ, and some Christians can't come from Bethlehem to Jerusalem, or whether it is the increasing fears in some quarters of a radicalization of society because of a tendency toward an Islamism, which in my opinion is not appropriate. All this is where we in the West are supposed to think throughout those 2 days, what can I do? I know pretty much where the Christians of the Holy Land are. My question is, how can we contribute to them? And in a sense, this is a question, James, that is being asked not only across the Holy Land, but it is being asked across the whole Middle East and North Africa region. Christian communities, much more numerous in Syria, in Lebanon, in Egypt, in the North African Maghreb countries, are all asking the same question. What is our role? What is our witness? What is this fellowship that binds us with the larger Church of Jesus Christ?
Well, Harry, I'm going to leave our listeners with that challenge because I think it's a very appropriate one. I just want to finish by offering you the floor one final time. 14th of July, an important date, and I think you can put that in context for us.
Yes. Now, this is interesting, James, because you brought up something as 14th of July is, of course, the National Day of Independence for France. And as you know, I grew up in France and studied in France with some Jesuitical background as well. And for me, 14th of July, of course, represents the three principles of the French Revolution. What are they? Liberty, equality, fraternity. But look a bit around you, and not only in the Holy Land or even in the Middle East and North Africa, look across the whole world. Those epistemic values which represent so much and which have so much resonance across the globe are pretty much on the wane, aren't there? I mean, who talks of fraternity these days? Equality? What equality are we talking about? Liberty? We're fighting for liberty. And as people in the Middle East and North Africa, but certainly in the Holy Land, are also fighting for their own liberty. And it is a personal liberty as well as a communitarian liberty. Then my hope, my wish, my prayer is that those values would basically become more relevant to an over-globalized world whereby the individual and the community come together to strengthen our faith and to strengthen the solidarity that we show each other. This is our hope. This is my hope. And I hope again and pray that the conference will deliver just a tiny bit of what we spoke about today.
That's my hope and prayer as well, Harry. Dr. Harry Hagopian, thanks ever so much. I'm going to actually leave our listeners with a few URLs, a few web addresses. First of all, Friends of the Holy Land is www.friendsoftheholyland.org.uk. Check that site out. If you want to hear more about the Catholic Church in England and Wales, www.catholicchurch.org.uk. And if you want to hear more from the highly entertaining and insightful Dr. Harry Hagopian, and go to www.epictasis.net.
And James, do you know what epictasis means? Epictasis is from Greek, and it's in Philippians in the Gospel. It means stretching out or outreach. And I believe that that is what this conference will try to do, just as what our ministry calls us to do every day.
Dr. Harry Hagopian, thanks once again.
My pleasure.